So the context, as Rupert said, is that I've spent about 2 years working on a project in Rwanda, which is in Central Africa, and you'll probably know that a genocide happened there 24 years ago, and you may remember some news or footage from that time. A lot of things have struck me as I've traveled back and forth to Rwanda, and one of the things that struck me is how much forgiveness is talked about, how much it's given, and how much people can testify to its power in their life. I won't give too much detail of the genocide, but during 100 days, upwards of 800,000 people were killed. And that means that there were 800,000 murders that needed to be accounted for. So you can understand how much forgiveness there's had to be. But it's not just talked about at a national level. As I've gathered people's stories over the last 2 years, I've heard people talk about it in their personal lives, and I've heard them talk about how it's transformed them. It's part of the everyday there. And this is in stark contrast to my usual settings. I don't know about you, but my work has required me to spend quite some time on Twitter. I probably spend more time on there than I'm required to, but what I'm struck by on Twitter is this kind of pandemic of blame and finger pointing. I just took some examples this week of reactions to the elections in Brazil. They've got a new president called Bolsonaro. Whether or not you think that's a good thing, there's blame on every side. There's people blaming him, he's blaming media, the right is blaming the left is blaming the right, and everybody's blaming the poor people who voted him in. There's so much finger pointing. And of course, pointing the finger isn't something new. That's not unique to the Twitter age. It happened in the Garden of Eden. But I think Twitter is symptomatic of how reactionary we can be and how quickly pointing the finger leads to somebody else pointing the finger and this kind of pandemic of blame that can spread. It's all over the media. I often wake up to the Today program on Radio 4, and it feels like every 5 minutes there's somebody else to pin the blame on. And I've also worked in a number of schools, and I have found staff rooms to be a desert of forgiveness. I don't know about you. Maybe there's more happening in the playground, but certainly my experience of staff rooms is a lot of blaming and complaining and not much letting off the hook. So I wonder if it's the same in your workplace, or your home, or even your experience of church. So this morning we're going to look again at God's initiative of forgiveness and to think about what it is that might prevent us from flowing in that every day. Why do we keep it as something occasional, or why do we only come to it once a year? So let's start with two stories. The first one is from Rwanda, and I'm going to paraphrase a bit. In 1994, Maria was living in the south of Rwanda with her husband and children. They were a farming family. When the violence hit their area, they tried to flee. And sadly, Maria was separated from her husband as they were running through some fields, and she only managed to escape with one of their children on her back. Maria arrived in Burundi, which borders Rwanda to the south, and when she got there, she discovered that her husband had been killed. She also learned that her other children had all been killed. As she tried to hide, people rejected her, and anybody that did hide her soon betrayed her hiding place and gave her up. But she made it. When she came back to Rwanda after the genocide, she was deeply distressed. She was stricken by grief. She was anxious, and she lived in fear. Every time she saw somebody from the other side, she felt like she was going to die. She was angry, and she was bound up tight. She describes herself as being bound in grief. 6 years later, three men approached her one day, and they told her that they were the men who had killed her family. They'd killed her husband, and they'd killed her children. She said, I couldn't forgive them, I couldn't even look at them. They lived in the same area, so they had to see each other. And one day she describes praying. She went to God and she said, I'm bound by grief and I can't live like this anymore. And she says, I felt God giving me love. I felt love restored in me, an unconditional love. And next time I saw them, I forgave them entirely. Their story afterwards is that they would meet together, eat and drink together. She says they laugh together, and their children are best friends. Those men helped rebuild her home and then helped rebuild homes for other people. Three things that strike me about Maria's act of forgiveness. It's bold, it's gentle, and it's freeing. How bold of her to lay aside vengeance and a hump for justice, making herself vulnerable by giving up control. I think sometimes forgiveness can be thought of as the soft option, like what you do if you're weak, just forgive, let someone off. And it can seem like the tougher thing to do, to point your finger or shake your fist. But what boldness to be able to look at somebody and face what they did and choose to extend mercy to them. That's a bold choice to make. At the same time, Maria showed she was gentle. The grace and undeserved kindness that she extended to those guys is like the opposite of the brutality of violence that they showed her family. It's mind-blowing. It doesn't fit with that reactionary blame and revenge we might be more used to when we're quick to pin blame. It's something quieter. It's soft. It's radically soft. It's a kind of moral miracle that goes against the grain. And then it's freeing. The victim herself, Maria, experienced a freedom as she forgave. She changed. She had no more desire to get even or to see those guys punished. She didn't want to hurt their reputation moving forwards, and she was truly able to wish them well. The perpetrators were also freed. They were released into such lightness that they could laugh with her, and they had space to rebuild. Just to say as an aside, there was a whole system of transitional justice in Rwanda, so these men would have had an opportunity to confess and do either community service or be imprisoned for a while as punishment. But I'm talking about personal forgiveness here. She described those guys before forgiveness as being like dead people among the living, such were they burdened by what they'd done. And afterwards, she said, life was beautiful. This formerly grief-stricken, angry and fearful widow says of the good things that happened after forgiveness, oh, there are so many things to tell, it would take too long. We see something similar in the Gospels. Feel free to turn to Luke 19 and we'll read a story that you might know quite well. Can you read that? It's very small. I'll read it from here. Luke 19, verses 1 to 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." We'll come back to this story a bit later, but for now we know that Zacchaeus had been busy getting everybody's back up. He was hated and he was on the edge of things as a result. It wasn't Jesus that he cheated, but he would have had a reputation with most of the crowd there. That tax collector, that man, that sinner, that cheat. You can imagine the names that they had for him as they muttered. But again, the bold and gentle act of forgiveness that Jesus extended, boldly going towards him through the crowd and gently extending mercy, brought grace and lightness to Zacchaeus, and his transformation was instant. He stood a little bit taller. He let go of some of his burden, and he was able to enter his future with joyful hope. Jesus had told Peter earlier on, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive him. And I think that means if we hold something against someone, even if they haven't wronged us directly, we need to forgive them. If something's going on and you know about it and you make a judgment about somebody, we need to forgive. With Zacchaeus, Jesus is demonstrating this instruction, even though the wrong wasn't done directly to him. He was aware of it and he chose to forgive. This is important to Jesus. I can imagine if I was among the disciples, rolling my eyes at having to stop along the journey yet again, for Jesus to have to break into somebody's life and transform it yet again, when I would be wanting to get to Jerusalem. I'd be thinking, this guy's a waste of our time. He's not going to change. We need to get on the road. But seeing an individual in their mess, knowing who they are made to be, and bringing transformation is what God is all about. Stop me in my tracks, Lord. We know forgiveness is important to Jesus because of the cross. It's crucial for Jesus. On the cross, he dies as a sacrifice that is an enfolding in grace by a self-giving God for people who've messed up. God is not afraid of mess. And not only does he physically ensure our ultimate forgiveness by dying, he verbally sets an example as well. In his dying breaths, he uses his words to speak forgiveness to the people in front of him who are dishonoring him. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I think forgiveness is not just meant for the big things, hurts and wrongs which might turn our worlds upside down and cause us to live a little bit differently thereafter, but for everyday grievances, including those wrongs you don't consciously feel affected by or which aren't directly aren't directed at you. I'm certainly learning that I get offended or hurt by tiny little things which, if undealt with, set up shop inside of me. And I guess that's why Jesus told Peter 70 times seven times. He expected us to have to forgive a lot. So to recap where we are just now, we're forgiven, so there's a motivation. Jesus tells us clearly to forgive, so there's a mandate. And we have clear examples, like in these stories, that forgiveness is a bold and gentle thing and that it brings transformation. So why don't we do it? Or why only rarely? Why do we save forgiveness for the really big wrongs? Why isn't it part of our everyday? Ali and Rachel are going to help me out here by putting something between these two sides. I haven't been around in this church long enough to know if you have a particular seat that you like to sit in. Maybe I know a few. Or why that might be, whether you like this side, whether you like that side, whether you like the balcony. But imagine with me, just for a minute, that you're sat on this side, or this side, because this is your side. You've got some kind of affinity with the people over here, and you've got some kind of affinity with the people over here, and you don't like the other side. For some reason, you've got something against them. You can imagine maybe they forgot your birthday. Maybe they took something that was yours. Maybe you heard that they'd said something about you. They've wronged you in some way, and same for you. And when that happened, which might have been a long time ago, instead of facing each other and sorting it out, you kind of turned away, and various things start to build up. So the things that might build up, the initial hurt and pain. Maybe the pain was so great that you had to shut your eyes, and when you opened them, you were looking the other way and you didn't want to look back at them. And to protect yourself and to avoid being wounded further, you decided not to go there again. That's a totally normal response to pain, wanting to protect ourselves. Then maybe your environment doesn't help. Remember that pandemic of blame that I talked about on Twitter? That's the context that we're living in a lot of the time, where the normal response or the default is just to look the other way and point a finger. Totally understandable that we would be influenced by our environment. Then perhaps some lies start forming about the other side or the other person. And among the people you're sat next to, things start getting said. They're like this, they're like that. They're not interested in me. Maybe amongst the people on this side, some labels start getting thrown around about that side: tax collectors, cheats, forgetful, sinners, bullies. you forget that they are not there wrong. And you just look and listen to your side. It might be that bitterness sets up shop in you, very subtly. You think, they weren't there when I needed them. And something takes root. Bitterness can stop the Holy Spirit being fully at home in us. It's like Holy Spirit doesn't have all the room Holy Spirit wants to move in us because there's something in the way. Ali described it like when you get a knotted muscle and you're not able to flex your leg with full freedom. Bitterness can keep us looking back at the past. Or maybe you feel so put out at being wronged, and this is the last one, that all you can think of is them getting what they deserve. For what they did to you, they deserve to be punished. So you look for justice, and you're focused on that fully. You're so angry, you're so put out, that all you want is for them to get their comeuppance. For you, it could be one of these, or it could be a combination. But all of these things together, hurt and pain and us shutting down, what we come to believe about that person, or about ourselves, or about God, being stuck looking back at the past, and then the hunt for justice and vengeance, these things get in the way of us facing that person. You're looking anywhere but at them. And before we know it, the wall between you and them has got so big that you can't see them anymore. Try, you can't see them. This is what I felt most stirred about as I prepared for today. What happens is that our record of wrongs gets swollen up with the things we come to believe, or a wish to see that person get their comeuppance, that it blocks us from seeing their humanity. We can't see their faces. And then it's harder to forgive them out of love. So that record of wrongs gets swollen up with the things we come to believe, or a wish to see that person get their comeuppance, and it blocks us from seeing their face, from seeing who they really are, and forgiving them out of love. You can't see them anymore. You don't even realize, but you've forgotten what they look like. Can you remember what top Kat's wearing? Can't see. Can you remember how beautiful Naomi is? You can't see. You're missing out. I tell you, you're missing out on this side. You're missing out on them. There's beauty here, there's potential, full of hope, but we can't see. We can't see them as God sees them, which is the same way God sees you, beautiful, good, enough. There's too much other stuff in the way. Thank you, helpers. You can put it down. FYI, when I ran through this with Ali earlier in the week, we got to this point and he was like, yeah, great message, Hannah, but I've got no one to forgive, so. Irrelevant. He wasn't aware that he was bearing any grudges. I begged to differ. I pushed back a bit and we soon found somebody. One of his friends, nobody in this room today, hadn't showed up to our wedding back in September. And we'd been in touch and we hadn't got a response. We'd reached out and hadn't heard anything back. And Ali was feeling miffed about it, but he hadn't noticed. And my question was, are you seeing that person differently now to how you did before? Yeah. Okay, so there was something in the way. And I think so often we don't realize we're carrying a little bit of annoyance, we're a bit aggrieved, but it can just take root. And I think if left for too long, those things can grow. We can ask God at the end to help us bring to mind, if you're struggling to think of anyone you might need to forgive. So a choice to see that person, with the fatherly strength and tenderness, boldness and gentleness of God, can help move us towards forgiveness. And I don't think this is linear or formulaic. I'm not quite sure how it works, but I definitely know that as we choose to see somebody with the love of God, with the eyes of God, we have access to resources of grace, which we can then extend, and then some of that wall comes down. Amazing healing can happen when we choose to forgive. I mean, when I say choose to see someone, I mean more how we view them inside, how we see them in our minds and hearts. I'm not talking about reconciliation. I think that's something different when we want to reconnect with somebody who we're in ongoing relationship with. I would see that as a different step. So here I'm talking about forgiving even someone who isn't aware of how they've wronged us, or someone who's no longer around in our day-to-day, because we can still forgive them. So dismantling that wall of stuff that's built up is costly. There's a lot to deal with, and it can be really painful, particularly if we're not forgiving regularly. It can be a hard place to go to. Forgiveness isn't easy. And it can also take time. It's a journey that can't all happen at once. I believe there can be instant healing and transformation when we forgive for some things, but that doesn't mean that we can forgive fully all in one go. I recently moved towards forgiving a person from my past for the first time, and as I went to that place, I realized that actually there had been so many hurts and so many occasions where I'd felt wronged and grieved that I couldn't deal with that all at once. So I'm asking God to help dismantle that wall piece by piece, and he's got gentleness to do that. It's going to take a while, and perhaps you can relate. When we're forgiving someone who's no longer around, a bit like that, a few ideas that might be helpful might be sitting opposite a chair that's empty, but imagining that that person is sat opposite us, and speaking quite honestly, saying how you've been hurt, how that's affected you, and then extending forgiveness. Another idea, which we heard about in Sozo training this week, would be to write a letter. Writing a letter as if you're going to send it to that person, but never sending it, and then shredding it as we sort of literally tearing up that record of wrongs. Or another idea, I was recently down in Devon on a beach walk, and I took a minute to write something in the sand knowing that the tide was going to come in. And I found that really helpful. So forgiveness can be for someone who's not in our day to day, but it can also be for somebody who hasn't wronged you directly. And I think these are the ones we can so easily miss. Maybe someone's mistreated someone you really care about. I get quite defensive about my friends, but I don't usually forgive their offenders. But that defensiveness and anger can take root. We still need to seek them out for forgiveness. As we go back to Jesus and Zacchaeus, we see that Jesus was just passing through on his way to Jerusalem. It wasn't a pre-planned grace gig for him in Jericho where he had set up a crowd to hear his lesson. He was passing through. This is just what he did. He was on his day-to-day journey, but he was so flowing in everyday forgiveness that this came naturally to him. Can I get the next slide? Thank you. Can you imagine how many things Jesus had to be forgiving day-to-day with the bunch of guys he had around him? Have you ever worked on a team where your team members have let you down? Or betrayed your trust, or just really struggled to get something? He must have been forgiving all the time. And one verse in the story tells us that facing Zacchaeus and having an encounter was where forgiveness would happen. We heard in the pictures earlier that God is all about seeking out. He wants encounter with us. It's verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." I'll just make two quick observations and then come to close. The name Zacchaeus means pure or clean or righteous. Jesus uses that name. Other people would have been saying, "That tax collector," as they muttered, "that cheat, that guy that offended me, that bully, that wrongdoer." But Jesus uses his name. It's much harder to keep distance from someone or dismiss them when you use their name. When I was living in Oxford, I was living with my parents at this time, and the doorbell went one day, and this neighbor came over, and she was hurling abuse at me. Why'd you do this? I discovered the fault was that our family car was parked in her space. I don't know why, but I had this moment of wisdom, and I thought, I need to tell her my name. So I said, "Hi, I'm Hannah." The anger fell off her. She introduced herself to me by name, and a friendship started between our two families. She couldn't stay as angry when I'd said my name. It was an amazing connection. So Jesus doesn't call, "Hey, tax collector." He uses Zacchaeus' name to focus on who he really is, pure, righteous, clean, and maybe to remind Zacchaeus of who he is. Jan mentioned some names a few weeks ago, about the names that God's given us and put inside of us. And I think one of the things we can encourage each other with is reminding each other, who's Jesus called you to be? What's the name on you? Was it Joy? Was it Dancer on Injustice? The One Who Stands? There are lots of good names there. And the second thing is that Jesus looks up and calls him close. It would have been so easy to stay with the crowd or to stay with the disciples wanting to get back on the road and point, looking the other way. But he doesn't point his finger from a distance or write him off as a pain in the butt. He wants to see him. That's so God. So perhaps like Jesus, as you're passing through on your day-to-day journey or work, you're aware of somebody who continually does the wrong thing or doesn't follow the rules, or someone who hurts your friends. But maybe for you, the injustice of it really frustrates or angers you, and you've kept them at a distance or shunned them with the label that you've created for them. That tax collector, that bully. It could even just be that colleague, not using their name. It's easy to avoid them and look the other way. But if you're not looking at that person in your heart, how can God change your view of them and move you towards forgiveness? In Rwanda, there's a word in Kinyarwanda which describes this transformation in seeing. In lots of the other stories I've collected, people describe feeling a disgust for the perpetrator before they've forgiven and seeing them as an animal or a little beast. And then after forgiveness, the word they use to describe it is, I see myself in you, or I see myself at the core of you. And it's about identifying with someone in a really, really close way, about seeing that in them at their core is goodness, is humanity, and identifying with them in that way. So I wonder how we might move towards forgiveness today with boldness and or gentleness. Maybe for you it's asking God to help you see somebody afresh, reminding you of their name and how he sees them. When we know we're held secure in God's love, we can leave justice to God, just like Maria gave up control of the outcome, and we can extend the grace God has given us. Choosing boldly to see that person in love can move us towards forgiveness. So how different would the harshness of Twitter look if we were flowing more readily in everyday forgiveness? If calling out who people are made to be replaced finger-pointing and looking away? God is making all things beautiful, and forgiveness is one of his best initiatives for doing that. What could your work relationships, home life, or experience of church look like if you were attentive to the walls that can build up and obstruct your view of people? Could the band come up? And could I ask you to stand with me? So on this journey of forgiveness, we're all learning, and I'm really, really a beginner. But there might be one step that we can take today. Again, I just repeat that God is okay with mess, and church is an okay place to have mess as well. So there's a couple of questions on the screen that we can reflect on. The first is, who's on the other side of a wall for me? Who's become a Zacchaeus for you? Is there a person you're aware of who's done wrong? Maybe they've not offended you directly, but mistreated your friends, and who you've shunned or labeled, defining them by that wrong. Maybe you've got an opinion of them. Maybe they're in this room. What's blocking your view of them? And might you choose to be able to see goodness at their core today, asking God for eyes of compassion? Or who could I move towards forgiving today? Small wrongs still need forgiving, and they can have a lasting impact if we don't deal with them. And it might be somebody who didn't meet your expectations, or who let you down in some way. Or it may be a bigger hurt, where full forgiveness doesn't all feel possible right now. But can you choose with boldness and gentleness to start taking some of the wall down? As Paul just plays, let us pause and reflect. Maybe close your eyes And try to imagine a person or a group of people. And if you're struggling, ask God to bring to mind a picture or a memory or a situation where some hurt was caused to you or some offense was taken. And just reflect for a minute on how you see that person. What's their name? And what is it about them that God sees? Thank you, God. During this song, we're going to make some space to pray down here on the side. And one step today for you could be asking God to help you see a person as human again, where you've viewed them only in light of their wrong. Or it could be asking God to ready your heart for forgiveness by attending to some part of that wall. Or maybe you want to go ahead and forgive someone today. If that or anything else sounds like something you'd like to pray through, feel free to come to the side during this song or pray with someone next to you. We would love to pray with you.